Chapter 4. Shalins is a fair resting place, in right of its good inn on the bank of the river, and the little steamboats, gay with green and red paint, that come and go upon it, which make up a pleasant and refreshing scene, after the moldy roads. But, unless you would like to dwell on an enormous plain, with jagged rows of irregular poplars on it, that look in the distance like so many combs with broken teeth, and unless you would like to pass your life without the possibility of going uphill, or going up anything but stairs, you would hardly approve of Chalons as a place of residence. You would probably like it better, however, than Lyons, which you may reach, if you will, in one of the before-mentioned steamboats, in 8 hours. What a city Lyons is! Talk about people feeling, at certain unlucky times, as if they had tumbled from the clouds. Here is a whole town that is tumbled, anyhow, out of the sky, having been first caught up, like other stones, that tumble down from that region, out of fens and barren places, dismal to behold. The two great streets through which the two great rivers dash, and all the little streets whose name is Legion, were scorching, blistering, and sweltering. The houses, high and vast, dirty to excess, rotten as old cheeses, and as thickly peopled. All up the hills, that hem the city in, these houses swarm, and the mites inside were lolling out of the windows, and drying their ragged clothes on poles, and crawling in, and out at the doors, and coming out to pant, and gasp upon the pavement, and creeping in, and out among huge piles and bales of fusty, moldy, stifling goods, and living, or rather not dying till their time should come, in an exhausted receiver. Every manufacturing town, melted into one, would hardly convey an impression of Lyons as it presented itself to me. For all the undrained, unscavengered qualities of a foreign town, seemed grafted, there, upon the native miseries of a manufacturing one, and it bears such fruit as I would go some miles out of my way to avoid encountering again. In the cool of the evening, or rather in the faded heat of the day, we went to see the cathedral, where divers old women, and a few dogs, were engaged in contemplation. There was no difference, in point of cleanliness, between its stone pavement and that of the streets, and there was a wax saint, in a little box like a berth aboard ship, with a glass front to it, whom Madame Tussaud would have nothing to say to, on any terms, and which even Westminster Abbey might be ashamed of. If you would know all about the architecture of this church, or any other, estates, dimensions, endowments, and history, is it not written in Mr. Murray's guidebook, and may you not read it there, with thanks to him, as I did? For this reason, I should abstain from mentioning the curious clock in Lyons Cathedral, if it were not for a small mistake I made, in connection with that piece of mechanism. The keeper of the church was very anxious it should be shown, partly for the honor of the establishment and the town, and partly, perhaps, because of his deriving a percentage from the additional consideration. However that may be, it was set in motion, and thereupon a host of little doors flew open, and innumerable little figures staggered out of them, and jerked themselves back again, with that special unsteadiness of purpose, and hitching in the gait, which usually attaches to figures that are moved by clockwork. Meanwhile, the sacristan stood explaining these wonders, and pointing them out, severally, with a wand. There was a center puppet of the Virgin Mary, and close to her, a small pigeon hole, out of which another, and a very ill-looking puppet made one of the most sudden plunges I ever saw accomplished, instantly flopping back again at sight of her, and banging his little door violently after him, taking this to be emblematic of the victory over sin and death, and not at all unwilling to show that I perfectly understood the subject, in anticipation of the showman, I rashly said, "Aha! The evil spirit! To be sure! He is very soon disposed of!" "Apostrophe pardon, monsieur," apostrophe said the sacristan, with a polite motion of his hand towards the little door, as if introducing somebody, the angel Gabriel. Soon after daybreak next morning, we were steaming down the Aralyron, at the rate of 20 miles an hour, in a very dirty vessel full of merchandise, and with only 3 or 4 other passengers for our companions. Among whom, the most remarkable was a silly, old, meek-faced, garlic-eating, immeasurably polite chevalier, with a dirty scrap of red ribbon hanging at his buttonhole, as if he had tied it there to remind himself of something, as Tom Noddy, in the farce, ties knots in his pocket handkerchief. For the last 2 days, we had seen great sullen hills, the first indications of the Alps, lowering in the distance. Now, we were rushing on beside them. Sometimes close beside them. Sometimes with an intervening slope, covered with vineyards. Villages and small towns hanging in mid-air, with great woods of olives seen through the light-open towers of their churches, and clouds moving slowly on, upon the steep acclivity behind them, ruined castles perched on every eminence, and scattered houses in the clefts and gullies of the hills. Made it very beautiful. The great height of these two, making the buildings look so tiny that they had all the charm of elegant models, their excessive whiteness, as contrasted with the brown rocks, or the somber, deep, dull, heavy green of the olive tree, and the puny size, and little slow walk of the Lilliputian men and women on the bank, made a charming picture. There were ferries out of number too, bridges, the famous Pont d'Esprit, with I don't know how many arches, towns where memorable wines are made, Valence, where Napoleon studied, and the noble river, bringing at every winding turn, new beauties into view. There lay before us, that same afternoon, the broken bridge of Avignon, and all the city baking in the sun, yet with an underdone pie crust, battlemented wall, that never will be brown, though it bake for centuries. The grapes were hanging in clusters in the streets, and the brilliant olander was in full bloom everywhere. The streets are old and very narrow, but tolerably clean, and shaded by awnings stretched from house to house. Bright stuffs and handkerchiefs, curiosities, ancient frames of carved wood, old chairs, ghostly tables, saints, virgins, angels, and staring daubs of portraits, being exposed for sale beneath, it was very quaint and lively. All this was much set off, too, by the glimpses one caught, through a rusty gate standing ajar, of quiet sleepy courtyards, having stately old houses within, as silent as tombs. It was all very like one of the descriptions, in the Arabian Nights. The 3 one-eyed calendars might have knocked at any one of those doors till the street rang again, and the porter who persisted in asking questions, the man who had the delicious purchases put into his basket in the morning, might have opened it quite naturally. After breakfast next morning, we sallied forth to see the lions. Such a delicious breeze was blowing in, from the north, as made the walk delightful. Though the pavement stones, and stones of the walls and houses, were far too hot to have a hand laid on them comfortably. We went, first of all, up a rocky height, to the cathedral, where Mass was performing to an auditory very like that of Lyons, namely, several old women, a baby, and a very self-possessed dog, who had marked out for himself a little coarser platform for exercise, beginning at the altar rails and ending at the door, up and down which constitutional walk he trotted, during the service, as methodically and calmly, as any old gentleman out of doors. It is a bare old church, and the paintings in the roof are sadly defaced by time and damp weather, but the sun was shining in, splendidly, through the red curtains of the windows, and glittering on the altar furniture, and it looked as bright and cheerful as need be. Going apart, in this church, to see some painting which was being executed in fresco by a French artist and his pupil, I was led to observe more closely than I might otherwise have done, a great number of votive offerings with which the walls of the different chapels were profusely hung. I will not say decorated, for they were very roughly and comically got up, most likely by poor sign painters, who eke out their living in that way. They were all little pictures, each representing some sickness or calamity from which the person placing it there had escaped, through the interposition of his or her patron saint, or of the Madonna, and I may refer to them as good specimens of the class generally. They are abundant in Italy. In a grotesque squareness of outline, and impossibility of perspective, they are not unlike the woodcuts in old books, but they were oil paintings, and the artist, like the painter of the primrose family, had not been sparing of his colors. In one, a lady was having a toe amputated, an operation which a saintly personage had sailed into the room, upon a couch, to superintend. In another, a lady was lying in bed, tucked up very tight and prim, and staring with much composure at a tripod, with a slop basin on it, the usual form of washing stand, and the only piece of furniture, besides the bedstead, in her chamber. One would never have supposed her to be laboring under any complaint, beyond the inconvenience of being miraculously wide awake, if the painter had not hit upon the idea of putting all her family on their knees in one corner, with their legs sticking out behind them on the floor, like boot trees. Above whom, the Virgin, on a kind of blue divan, promised to restore the patient. In another case, a lady was in the very act of being run over, immediately outside the city walls, by a sort of pianoforte van. But the Madonna was there again. Whether the supernatural appearance had startled the horse, a bay griffin, or whether it was invisible to him, I don't know. But he was galloping away, ding-dong, without the smallest reverence or compunction. On every picture ex voto was painted in yellow capitals in the sky. Though votive offerings were not unknown in pagan temples, and are evidently among the many compromises made between the false religion and the true, when the true was in its infancy, I could wish that all the other compromises were as harmless. Gratitude and devotion are Christian qualities, and a grateful, humble, Christian spirit may dictate the observance. Hard by the cathedral stands the ancient palace of the popes, of which one portion is now a common jail, and another a noisy barrack, while gloomy suites of state apartments, shut up and deserted, mock their own old state and glory, like the embalmed bodies of kings. But we neither went there to see state rooms, nor soldiers' quarters, nor a common jail, though we dropped some money into a prisoner's box outside, whilst the prisoners, themselves, looked through the iron bars, high up, and watched us eagerly. We went to see the ruins of the dreadful rooms in which the Inquisition used to sit. A little old swarthy woman, with a pair of flashing black eyes, proof that the world hadn't conjured down the devil within her, though it had had between 60 and 70 years to do it in, came out of the barrack cabaret, of which she was the keeper, with some large keys in her hands, and marshaled us the way that we should go. How she told us, on the way, that she was a government officer, concierge du Palais Apostolique, and had been, for I don't know how many years, and how she had shown these dungeons to princes, and how she was the best of dungeon demonstrators, and how she had resided in the palace from an infant, had been born there, if I recollect right, I needn't relate. But such a fierce, little, rapid, sparkling, energetic she-devil I never beheld. She was alight and flaming, all the time. Her action was violent in the extreme. She never spoke, without stopping expressly for the purpose. She stamped her feet, clutched us by the arms, flung herself into attitudes, hammered against walls with her keys, for mere emphasis. Now whispered as if the Inquisition were there still. Now shrieked as if she were on the rack herself, and had a mysterious, hag-like way with her forefinger, when approaching the remains of some new horror, looking back and walking stealthily, and making horrible grimaces, that might alone have qualified her to walk up and down a sick man's counterpane, to the exclusion of all other figures, through a whole fever. passing through the courtyard, among groups of idle soldiers, we turned off by a gate, which this G-Goblin unlocked for our admission, and locked again behind us, and entered a narrow court, rendered narrower by fallen stones and heaps of rubbish, part of it choking up the mouth of a ruined subterranean passage that once communicated, or is said to have done so, with another castle on the opposite bank of the river. Close to this courtyard is a dungeon we stood within it, in another minute in the dismal tower des Oubliettes, where Rienzi was imprisoned, fastened by an iron chain to the very wall that stands there now, but shut out from the sky which now looks down into it. A few steps brought us to the catches, in which the prisoners of the Inquisition were confined for 48 hours after their capture, without food or drink, that their constancy might be shaken, even before they were confronted with their gloomy judges. The day has not got in there yet. They are still small cells, shut in by four unyielding, close, hard walls, still profoundly dark, still massively doored and fastened, as of old. Goblin, looking back as I have described, went softly on, into a vaulted chamber, now used as a storeroom. Once the chapel of the Holy Office. The place where the tribunal sat, was plain. The platform might have been removed but yesterday. Conceive the parable of the Good Samaritan having been painted on the wall of one of these Inquisition chambers. But it was, and may be traced there yet. High up in the jealous wall, are niches where the faltering replies of the accused were heard and noted down. Many of them had been brought out of the very cell we had just looked into, so awfully, along the same stone passage. We had trodden in their very footsteps. I am gazing round me, with the horror that the place inspires, when Goblin clutches me by the wrist, and lays, not her skinny finger, but the handle of a key, upon her lip. She invites me, with a jerk, to follow her. I do so. She leads me out into a room adjoining a rugged room, with a funnel-shaped, contracting roof, open at the top, to the bright day. I ask her what it is. She folds her arms, leers hideously, and stares. I ask again. She glances round, to see that all the little company are there, sits down upon a mound of stones, throws up her arms, and yells out, like a fiend, La Salle de la Question. Apostrophe apostrophe, the chamber of torture. And the roof was made of that shape to stifle the victim's cries. Oh Goblin, Goblin, let us think of this a while, in silence. Peace, Goblin. Sit with your short arms crossed on your short legs, upon that heap of stones, for only 5 minutes, and then flame out again. Minutes. Seconds are not marked upon the palace clock, when, with her eyes flashing fire, Goblin is up, in the middle of the chamber, describing, with her sunburnt arms, a wheel of heavy blows. Thus it ran round. Cries Goblin. Mash, mash, mash. An endless routine of heavy hammers. Mash, mash, mash. Upon the sufferer's limbs. See the stone trough. Says Goblin. For the water torture. Gurgle, swill, bloat, burst. For the Redeemer's honor. Suck the bloody rag. Deep down into your unbelieving body, heretic. At every breath you draw. And when the executioner plucks it out, reeking with the smaller mysteries of God's own image, know us for his chosen servants, true believers in the Sermon on the Mount, elect disciples of him who never did a miracle but to heal, who never struck a man with palsy, blindness, deafness, dumbness, madness, any one affliction of mankind, and never stretched his blessed hand out, but to give relief and ease. See. Cries Goblin. There the furnace was. There they made the irons red hot. Those holes supported the sharp stake, on which the tortured persons hung poised, dangling with their whole weight from the roof. But, apostrophe and Goblin whispers this, Monsieur has heard of this tower? Yes? Let Monsieur look down, then. Apostrophe, a cold air, laden with an earthy smell, falls upon the face of Monsieur. For she has opened, while speaking, a trapdoor in the wall. Monsieur looks in. Downward to the bottom, upward to the top, of a steep, dark, lofty tower. Very dismal, very dark, very cold. The executioner of the Inquisition, says Goblin, edging in her head to look down also, flung those who were past all further. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.